Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. My name is Kate Prusser, and with me as always is my friend, my co-host, my bosom buddy, John Troopin. John, how are you today?
I'm hot.
Oh my God, so hot. Oh my
God. Perhaps not shocking to anyone in the Seattle area, but it is a hot one, as a wise man once said.
It's not just that it's hot, it's that it's hot and not pretty, because you can't see the water, so I can't even trick my brain into imagining it's cool.
It's a hot where you like don't want to be outdoors. Like,
no.
You don't even want to be at the water, as you said, because like it'll just be smoggy and smoky, and you'll just like struggle to breathe. Like, if you have any sort of breathing problems, like, it sucks.
Yes, prayers up to everybody who has asthma or allergies or anything that's being impacted by the smoke in the air and the general unbreathability of it right now.
I'm curious, like, because I know there are professional players with asthma and with things like that, and we see players who have sort of these illnesses or conditions that they have to manage. I wonder how often that factors into, you know, different places signing. You know, obviously, like if you had some sort of condition, you might not look at LA, or you might not, you know, look at playing in Colorado. I wonder if that has come up in negotiations much.
I don't know. I googled baseball player asthma, and the result I got was Brett Tomko.
Oh.
Name of the D2 player, the award given to the D2 pitcher of the year. Our own Dan Altavilla won the Brett Tomko award. But yes, he played for the Giants. So I don't know, that wouldn't be a terrible place to wind up if you had asthma, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was one of the big hauls for the Mariners back in the day. But I don't recall, I must admit, any information on his struggles with the heat and with the many potential issues that would come up during after he came back for Griffey. But who knows? Regardless, it is not as consequential, as no one is playing baseball in Seattle. The Rainiers may have to deal with it, but thankfully we are here, and the Mariners are in balmy Kansas City.
Pleasant. It's probably the only time I will say that about Kansas City over Seattle. The weather is preferable.
It's been a weird week in baseball, or especially, I mean, obviously in Mariners fandom, right? Because, like, we've had this long stretch of time where the Mariners have been not out of it, but realistically they've not played like a team that was going to make anything up, and then all of a sudden they're a game and a half back of the wild card, right? And they're going to be playing tonight. When people are listening to this, we'll have had the first game of the series already, but against the Royals, who I think kind of suck.
I think so, too. I think they're a paper tiger team.
I really hope they are ignited into a delightful inferno this weekend. Then. Just too much spicy barbecue sauce. And
yeah, I'll take a further reduction in our air quality if it's pieces of the Royals blowing across our landscape, for sure.
Just little embers and scraps of Royal.
Oh, there goes a particularly greasy one. That must have been Kendrys at some point. I know he's not a Royal anymore, but I can't resist an opportunity.
He got away from the Angels and then has just hung on to wearing some color, like some shade of blue.
Covers the barbecue stains.
What kind of barbecue sauce are you using? Using Funfetti barbecue sauce.
I don't know why. I just cannot with him. That's one of those players that I just cannot ever be logical about. Just the sight of his face infuriates me.
I'm not so far away from you there. He was really, I mean, if he'd been anything, he might, you know, this we might not be in a playoff drought. There are a lot of people, I suppose, if they've been anything. Yeah. But,
like the entire 2010 roster.
Yeah.
If any of that was a whole team of people not being anything. So.
Uh-huh.
That's sad. Let's talk about something happier. Let's talk about Royals we do like or did like. I always love Jerrod Dyson. I'm so happy that he is he's so much fun to watch, and he really had himself quite a series there in Texas. Saving some pitcher bacon.
Yeah, a couple good first innings. That was just some really extraordinarily bad base running.
Oh yeah, so
by
bad.
The Rangers. And you talked a bit of this about this. You know, you wrote about how the Mariners were fine in that Rangers series, and you know, also the Rangers were pretty remarkably
bad.
Inept.
They were bad. They were so. That's a team that's reeling. They're staggering.
Yeah. Although you know, in some of those situations, the Mariners did put the pressure on them to be in those situations.
Right.
Know, those Dyson plays were exceptional. And not just bad base running, although also bad base running. and there was the Jose Reyes. This was. Over the weekend, but you know,
yep.
Jose Reyes made a similarly boneheaded play. delicious.
So good. I was at that game. I'm still carrying the sunburn from being at that game, being in the Maple Grove, which was awesome.
Oh, so much fun.
So
it was
fun.
Another hot one. You may, listeners, hear a bit of a fan, and a more high-quality podcast might turn that off or edit that out. We are a podcast that is trying to survive the afternoon, and so we're going to have some airflow, and I apologize. Hopefully it has not come through quite so loudly in the recording.
I would offer to turn the fan off, but I would probably literally just melt. So I'm sorry,
we'll just,
I can't.
We'll just hear your speech devolve into a little. So back on Dyson. I'm curious because I've seen the idea bandied about a little bit, and we've talked about this in Slack, and I'm curious where you stand on. Do you think it's worth extending him? A guy who's in his early 30s, doesn't seem like his skill set's really falling off. His base running is, he's, I think, the second highest rated base runner in baseball just by BSR.
He is single-handedly propping up the Mariners' BSR score, which is still bad, but would look so much worse if not for Dyson.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm very much torn. I mean, he's this incredibly fun player. He's absolutely valuable. It's not just a situation of like, well, I like Tom Wilhelmsen a lot and want him around.
Yeah.
But like, I can tell logically that he's not that good of a pitcher, or at least he's not as as good as some of the other options. But this is not this is a guy who makes the team better. Is that something you're interested in, or do you think the money should be or would be better spent elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because of all the players who I thought were going to be traded at the deadline. I think we were talking about this a few weeks ago, I saw us cratering through that Yankees and Red Sox series and just stumbling and having to be sellers, essentially, and Dyson would be the thing we sold. It looked like an inevitability, but... Yeah.
And I wonder if they... I mean, I'm sure they asked around. Jerry's never met a phone that he didn't want to,
pick up and dial.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have speed dial into his phone. He has it just tattooed on his, inner wrist, so that, every number in the league. Or he wears, actually, wears, a QB wrist, with all the players on. He just flips that up.
Yeah. Okay, I could see that.
Call Rays. but we saw what the market was, right, for hitters.
Outfielders. And outfielders specifically with V-Mart going for...
JD.
No, JD. Right, JD.
Yeah. It
was... Woof. That was not a haul. Not a haul. The opposite of a haul. So yeah, I mean, probably not. We weren't going to get anything that significantly made the club better. So I had no idea, honestly. I looked around at some teams that were just so bad with their outfield and thought, well, there's no way they couldn't use a Dyson. But
right. I was interested if the Rockies would go for something, just because Carlos Gonzalez has been a complete nightmare.
But yeah. Him, the Rockies and the Cardinals have had some real problems in their outfield, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were definitely a couple potential suitors that I saw, but...
Yeah. But instead, here we are.
And we are.
You know, this is sort of the team. I mean, you know, if you look at the lineup, you know, tonight's lineup, it's Gamel, Segura, Cano, Cruz, Seager... Valencia, I think probably they've got Martin, Zunino, you know, and so, or I guess Heredia or Dyson, depending on, I think it's Cahill, so it's probably Dyson.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's sort of going to be the team that we've got. You know, the pitching staff is as healthy as it's probably going to be for the rest of the year. You know, maybe you get Shea Simmons back, probably not at this point this year. Maybe Hisashi Iwakuma comes back. He's still not throwing off a mound.
And even if he does, I don't know that's
an improvement.
Oh, so. We have Dyson, Heredia, Gamel outfield today.
Okay.
So no Martin.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's not, the you know, this is going to be the team. I mean, you get Haniger back at some point in the next couple weeks, probably. But, you know, is that... I guess my main question and what I'm curious to talk with you about is that team, because, you know, it's not really now about, is this a playoff team? Like, you know, a team's a playoff team if they make the playoffs. You know, this team probably isn't a playoff team last year because a team, you know, the Mariners were 10 games over 500 last year and were not a playoff team. And this year... everything is weird and clumped together. And so are they better than the Royals and are they better than the Rays is where we're at. And, I mean, we talked about, you know, a little bit about how we feel about the Royals. You know, their pitching is okay. You know, they've had...
Is Blake Snell still in there?
For the Rays?
Lineup, yeah.
I think he's doing
still in
well
the rotation?
This year. Yeah, I believe Snell's been... one of the best sort of pieces for them.
Really? Because he has had his struggles. I had a brief fever dream moment where I, last off season, where I dreamed that they might give him to us.
Oh, you are more, far more correct.
He's actually not having a good year.
No.
Yeah, no.
No.
No, FIP of 5.08. I feel a little protective of Blake Snell as a, I don't know if he actually set foot on UW's campus, but he definitely considers himself a Husky, so I feel a little bit of protection towards him, and so I don't like when I see people saying mean things about him online, and there have been a lot of them this year, so he's kind of busted. I don't think he's overall busted, but he's having a real rough year.
Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, part of it was he was so on point last year, you know, or at least on point enough, you know, that it was going to be exciting.
Yeah, like a 3.39 FIP with a 9.91 K9. That looks great. But
it's
then
essentially if you made James Pazos into a, if James Pazos could start.
Yeah. But then the BB9 is 5.16. So the regression, she came with vengeance in her eyes.
Yeah.
He is having a rough year. So they've got, what, Archer, Snell, who else is in their rotation?
Cobb is back, I believe.
Oh, yeah, Cobb. Who's been involved in trade talks, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is Fine fine-ish?
Yeah. He's been, it's essentially, you know, they've had a sort of similar situation to us where they've had breakout young guys or breakout performances from guys they weren't sure about, which has allowed them to sort of prop up their aging meh players. And yeah. Chris Archer has been back to
Chris
being
Archer.
One of the better pitchers in the league, as opposed to whatever, you know, not bad pitching that he was doing last year, but sort of less dominant. So,
yeah, I mean, there's nothing outside of Archer. There's nothing in that rotation that particularly frightens me. Looks like Cobb's ERA is outperforming his FIP by a good amount. Mm-hmm. The bullpen, you know, now they have Cishek, obviously, mm-hmm. but the bullpen.
I mean, yeah, they've been trying to plug holes all year because they've had Farquhar playing a big role. I think they just picked up Sergio.
They got
Romo.
Rid of Farquhar, didn't they?
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they've been picking up guys. They had, I think, Jumbo Diaz. It just,
oh my gosh,
they've been working the waiver wire for relievers, and like the Mariners have been working the waiver wire for relievers, but like it was more like the Mariners last year is what the Rays have been doing this year in terms of like, you're available. Come on.
Come on down.
come on and hang out in front of Edwin Diaz and just try to get the game to him any way you can. So, I mean, yeah, they've just had a lot of guys fall off. And Oda Rizzi's been hurt. And
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they essentially, they're a team that
is being propped up by Lomo and Steven Souza, who suddenly forgot that he... that he is a strikeout king.
Yeah, or learned to be a walk king as well.
Yeah, and yeah, 12.9, 13% practically BB.
Yeah. So all of this, I guess, comes together to be the main focus, which is, in my opinion, the Mariners are a better team than the Rays.
Well, they were sure a better team than the Rays when they swept them.
It's true.
And I think the Mariners have gotten better since that series, and the Rays, I don't think, have.
So they made a couple moves at the deadline, right? Or near the deadline, right? They added Edeni Hecheverria, the shortstop from the Marlins, a while before.
Are you saying Brad Miller shortstop didn't work out for them?
It did not, and has not been working out. I think he's been playing second base the majority of this year, and unfortunately, somehow, I believe he's either leading the league or is near the top in the league in walk rate while still having a... Yeah, he has a 17...
What? It's practically 18% BB.
Brad Miller's numbers this year...
And yet he's barely above the Mendoza line in his average. What is this?
It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Because like last year, Brad Miller had 30
home
runs, and it was this remarkable thing of like similar to Trumbo, where it was like they hit tons of homers and somehow did so little everything with everything else.
Yeah,
that their value was a little bit. Like overinflated by that big number, which is remarkable, and like it's really impressive that Brad Miller hit 30 homers. And so this year, you know, the expectation was, all right, well, he'll be an above average hitter and play all right defense. And this year he's completely stopped hitting for power, walks more than anyone else in the league, and everything else is about the same. So it's one of the weirdest things I have ever seen. Anyways, the 2014 Mariners essentially is what the Rays are. And
yeah, actually, that's startlingly accurate.
Yeah, and they have pretty good outfielders.
Logan Morrison just carries the spirit of the 2014 Mariners? Maybe the 2014 Mariners were all just like a product of a fever dream of Logan Morrison's, and he just carries that ability wherever he goes.
Here's all I'm going to say. As I look at the bat as they line up, I see Logan Morrison. I see Malik Smith, technically still a Mariner. Jesus Sucre. Ricky Weeks Jr. Brad Miller. And I always think of Blake Snell as a Mariner, but he's not. He's just from here, and we played against him. And then in the bullpen, you've got Danny Farquhar. You had Erasmo. Got Andrew Kittredge.
Kittredge, yeah.
And in the bullpen, again, you also technically have Jesus Sucre. So, it is
bizarro world, Mariners.
I guess I would say the Mariners are slightly better than the Rays. I think, you know, when I looked earlier this week at playoff odds, and I think the Mariners and Rays were essentially projected to be about the same down the stretch in terms of win-loss record, which is to say they're both projected to be a win better or at around 500 for the rest of the year, which I think is reasonable enough. I would give the Mariners a slight edge in terms of the position players that they have. But it's really a push, which means that the fact that the Rays are in the AL East and have to play the Red Sox and Yankees is hopefully going to act in their favor, or in the Mariners' favor, I suppose. Because in the month of September, the Rays have a 3-game series against the White Sox and then play Minnesota, Boston, the Yankees, Boston, Chicago, the Cubs, and then
not even the good Chicago.
No, the one that will likely pound their faces in now that they've remembered how to be good at baseball. And then play 7 games at Baltimore and the Yankees. And yes, the Mariners have a rather brutal stretch upcoming as well. Really in the midst of a brutal stretch, but the Rays currently have, I believe, they play 3 teams that have below 500 records for the rest of the year, and play 7 teams with above 500 records. So
that is brutal.
If you're looking for something promising there, you know, the Rays have a rough stretch upcoming as well. So that doesn't mean, you know, it's going to fully work out, but and thankfully the Mariners do have 3 games against them to ideally, you know, push themselves up later in August, but
yeah. I would consider the Rays series a series that they should win. If they don't win, they do not have any business being in any kind of postseason.
Yeah.
Because they've already showed that they are theoretically a better team than the Rays by sweeping them. So.
Right. And that is, you know, on the road, which is tougher. But
on the road is hard. It's true.
And in the opposite corner of the country.
Right. And I was hard on them about not winning the Texas series or the Texas games.
Not sweeping.
Decisively enough, yes, not sweeping. Not taking advantage of some opportunities that I thought were there. So I would very much love for them to just make me look so dumb. Please make me look so dumb, Mariners. Please. I would love, because I don't have a super great feeling about the Royals series, even though I don't believe in them totally. They are just sort of playing out of their minds, and I think that that's always hard to, especially to go into somebody else's house, and considering how rough, and we've played them much more recently than we played the Rays, and looked really bad, really bad at it, just really bad. And, you know, you can put some of that on one of those was a Moore start. But he really didn't give up that many runs to them. I think it was like 3, 4. Mm-hmm. He didn't fall apart or anything. They did nothing. They did nothing as far as like run support goes.
It was 3-1.
3-1. Yeah. I mean, that's, I need to be able to score. Need to be able to score.
Especially
on
against Ian Kennedy. who they will face.
Again. Yeah. So yet another shot. Prove me wrong, Mariners. Yeah.
And that's, you know, another similar case, right? There's four games. You know, it's tough to look at any of these pitching matchups other than Paxton and really be excited.
Enthused about any of them, for sure.
The offense. You know, I mean, the Rays have, or not the Rays, the Royals have assembled just a fleet of, I think, probably Jerry's dream staff, where it's five dudes who, you know, all are like three starters, but like give up a bunch of fly balls and like don't do too much, you know, don't walk too many people. You know, Trevor Cahill being the exception, who they just acquired and who gives up exclusively grounders. But, you know, after that, you have essentially, you know, Hamill, Duffy, and Kennedy, and then they miss Jason Vargas, who I am looking forward to the Mariners signing this offseason. But, you know, it's tough to look at Gallardo versus Cahill, Paxton versus Hamill, Danny Duffy, who's been solid, versus Felix, and Ian Kennedy versus Erasmo, who it probably can still go only 85 pitches or something.
Yeah.
If you even want him to go 85 pitches. And, you know, it's tough to look at that and say, yes, this is an ideal setup. you know, and then they did just get swept by the Orioles and only score three runs entire series.
That was weird.
So, you know, who knows? I mean, it's tough to put anything on something, you know, recent like that, but I guess who are you looking for that will sort of be the barometer in this series of, you know, what happens? You know, what player do you think has to make the biggest contribution?
I mean, it feels like a cop out to say big three needs to keep being the big three, because I feel like that's just a given every time.
But I mean, that's what we saw when they had success, right? In the first sort of stretch after the All-Star break, and I mean, even still now, we're after the All-Star break a little ways, and they've been decently successful. But you know, Cano coming back and having at least a good series, you know, and still hitting so many grounders, which is driving me nuts. But you know, still hitting the ball hard, still getting on base a fair amount, and not seeing this steep decline. Seager having at last a pretty good stretch, and putting, you know, stuff together, and Cruz, who is not, you know, it's not a situation where you can just look at Cruz and think, oh well, he'll get hot, because, you know, that's not how players work, but he's, you know, that's just not how baseball works. But you know, Cruz.
But
has
I do
been
think there
fine.
Was a there was a time where Cruz, it felt, was pressing a little to me. Did you feel that, where he was wanting to get the big hit and just chasing stuff, like chasing stuff in the dirt and swinging so hard and just not getting anything out of it?
He had a incredibly rough stretch where it just was like, you know, when he missed big. And that happens a lot for him, but it seemed especially exacerbated, and and I think the other part with him is he just can't run. He's like he's got one leg, like maybe one and a half arms, and he just, like, he's walking so much this year. Like he's got the highest walk rate I think he's had in any full season. I think the highest since he like first got called up or something. Or his second year, I guess, in the league, which was only, you know, half a season, or not even that. But
11.2%, which is
up 2% from last year. Like, that's fantastic. And you know, he's still hitting. You know, he's on pace for around 30 homers, which is good, but not quite. You know, it's not the 40 homer man that he was last year.
Right.
Which, again, like, you know, you don't necessarily need that from him, and you kind of expect that from a guy who just turned 37. But the team needs yeah, I don't want to say like the stars need to be the stars, like, you know, that's a corny trope, but the players that are, you know, Gamble is playing, I think, maxed out. Gamble is playing the best that Gamble can play.
Oh, you know,
Heredia and Dyson are playing really well. You know, they're playing probably about as well as they can play. And if this is the best that Seager and Cano and Cruz can play, then the Mariners are not probably going to be a playoff team this year, even
or
in the weird
ever.
Definition. Yeah, or in the next, you know, while.
Yeah.
So, you know, Cano, you can say, well, he's aging, but, like, his batting ball profile suggests, well, he's doing most of the things fine. He's just hitting a bunch of grounders. Cruz, you can say, well, he's probably not going to get much better, but, like, this can be enough. Seager has to continue to be good and has to continue to be the better version of himself.
Yeah,
that he's
continue
been.
Digging himself out of that early season hole.
Right, because, like, right now he's on pace to have the worst season of his career.
Yeah.
Which is still good. Like, that's still, you know, Kyle Seager's still a good player, but you need Kyle Seager to be Kyle Seager, top 25 player in baseball, or at least, you know, top 20 player in the American League, and he's not been that, which is a challenge when your best players aren't playing your best, then it puts a lot on the sort of role players, you know, the other guys, and there's not a lot more that the Mariners have, I think, to get out of those positions.
Although I think we can roll Segura in with that big three now to some. I mean, in my mind, whenever I think of the three, I've sort of in my brain made it the big four now, because even though he doesn't maybe have the power tool that the other guys have, just his ability to get on base, to gap a double here and there, to start those things happening is, and so I would say that he is also, and maybe even more, so that the onus doesn't just fall on those guys having to get the big hits. Get them on base, get them over, like, small ball your way into some stuff here. And don't, decrease the pressure on the bottom part of the lineup to have to be producing. Because, my God, poor Ben Gamble, I'm afraid he's going to break. He's trying so hard all the time. Just the effort.
Yeah. And sort of, you know, we talked about, you know, the Rays are propped up by this group of, you know, a few guys who are really achieving at their peak, you know, Morrison or Lomo and Souza,
Dickerson,
you know, Corey Dickerson, who's you know, having had a little bit more of a track record of being this guy, but you know, the Mariners have, partially because of, you know, guys being injured, you know, the Mariners have a bunch of guys who have been good and no one who's been great, which is sort of the opposite of what last year's team was, where it was these three guys, you know, Cruz, Seager, and Cano dragging
Adam Lind.
Yeah, you know, I think about the, like, there was the game, I think, in September against Boston, where Cano hit a homer off Fernando Abad that was just this, like, you dummies, like, come on, we're not done. Like, I'm not done with you. And then, like, the Twins series where Cruz hit, like, 17 homers and just, you know, and, like, his hand, he couldn't feel his hand and was just
one-handed. Willing. He essentially hit 17 home runs one-armed.
Yeah, it was just like, they're, you know, by sheer force of will. It's like, that's not the team now. Like, this team can do something from every position, but they haven't been... they haven't all contributed at once, and maybe they won't because cluster luck sucks sometimes. Yeah. But this, you know, I think there is more potential in the Mariners than there is potential in either the Royals or the Rays, because those guys that we have expected to be the stars are not yet at their peaks, and, yeah. and that's sort of what gives me hope. And that as that combined with the bullpen being,
I was just gonna say, I want to pull the bullpen into this a little bit because the bullpen kept us alive in those Texas games. After having received much shit over the course of this, deservedly over the course of this year, again. It sort of feels like things have solidified, and I want to just give a huge amount of credit for that to Emilio Pagan, who I think has just been nails.
It's remarkable. And Zach Milkus wrote a great piece on Pagan and sort of his progression from, well...
unheralded prospect, I would say, is fair.
Yeah. And you know, there's rarely much heralding for middle relief guys, but... Pagan's essential, you know, Pagan has been one of the best relievers in the minors, you know, every step of the way. His strikeout rates have been nuts, and he, you know, really turned it up. I think it was last year, right? He really cranked it up.
One thing, so I think DePoto is obsessed with this idea of getting a Divinsky, right? Like, we've heard about this over and over and over again. I think he acquired Posey partially with the idea that, like, hey, it looks sort of like Divinsky, could be him. And just, you know, just trying to turn these guys into long relievers and just going through every avenue he can. And then quietly, here's Emilio Pagan just hanging out, being the closer in Tacoma, and all of a sudden is like, yeah, I can give you two innings. You want three innings? Okay, I can give you three innings. And he's just, it's not a role he has ever had during his minors career. He has always been sort of a late innings, either setup guy or closer or whatever. And he's just adapted to it amazingly well. I mean, his stuff is great. Like, the stuff is, you know, he can touch 95, whatever, but he'll throw it in there at 93. Like, it's not exactly world burning stuff. It's just, really well located.
And guys don't hit it. Like,
must have crazy spin. I don't know, but somehow they just do not pick that up.
And yeah, I mean, it was interesting. You know, one of the things that I didn't realize that when I read that in Zach's piece was Pagan has learned and worked and improved his slider after learning it from Edwin Diaz, which, you know, the Joaquin Benoit coaching slider tree expands its leafy branches once again. It's fun to see.
One thing that is really interesting to me is, like, I had heard a lot about Pagan through the system. I was kind of following him. He got to AAA, and he kind of fell off. Like, I don't know if it was that he wasn't... he had trouble adjusting to the level, or like maybe it was mental, I don't know, but all of a sudden his walk rate jumped all the way up last year to, I think, 4.72 BB9, still striking a lot of guys out, but just struggled, and then went to the Arizona Fall League and wasn't, for me, particularly impressive there. And I was like, man, I don't know about this kid. Why does everyone keep telling me he's so good? And then goes to the WBC, and I don't know what has. He's always been good throughout the system. I don't know if it was just like a reset on his one wobble last year, but that experience, and he just talked about the influence talking to Yadier Molina had on him, and just being, and he was like, oh, okay, I belong. Like, I belong with these guys. I belong here. And you saw him come up and struggle, and he went back to Tacoma, and I think it was a similar thing where he was like, oh, I belong. I belong at the major league level. And he just pitched like his hair was on fire in Tacoma. He was he struck out Ahmed Rosario on three pitches that were so nasty. And then, he's come up and just, I do think that there's a mental aspect to it where he's like, yeah, this is what I am now. I'm a major league. Or it was in him all along, and maybe he just had the extra little confidence boost. Because he says he's believed in himself all along, but some switch has been flipped with him, and it just seems like, you know, he was like, okay, I can be a late inning setup guy. Oh, you want me to be you want me to be Divinsky? Fine, I can do that. And he's been really fun.
Yeah, it has been nice to sort of, Because, I mean, I think one of the things was, you know, for the majority of this year, especially with, you know, Cishek was out and Zik was out, mm-hmm. and, you know, we had the constant rotation.
Evan Marshall.
Poor Evan Marshall.
Poor Evan Marshall.
Who's back?
Yeah, now. Yeah, in Tacoma. I'm excited to go see him.
Very cool. You know, we had that, and then the rotating door of guys who probably aren't ready to pitch in the majors as starters, but, well, here you go. You know, so you had to burn Marshall and then bring up Pagan, and Pagan pitches three innings, and then you bring up Casey Lawrence.
Yeah.
It's just this constant, you know, revolving door, and now it's like, oh, like, I'm not sure how much I think that, you know, bullpen roles are worth the trouble that they can be, because if you're locked into this mentality, then I think you can really limit yourself. But the general sense of these are the guys who are going to pitch.
Yes.
Maybe is pretty good.
In some combination.
You know, the idea of like, okay, well, we have Tony Zick and we have Emilio Pagan and we have David Phelps and we have, you know, Nick Vincent and we have James Pazos and we have those guys every night.
And we have Scrabble when we need, or Zipchinski. He doesn't like Scrabble. Zipchinski. Zep.
Yeah.
And we have Diaz.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, like, even if, you know, you're not optimally using those guys, having the same guys who are all at least decent, you know, out there every night is something that is incredibly relieving just to watch. And I think makes, you know, it's not just like, well, you have better players, the team's going to do better. Like, obviously, but it's just having that sort of consistent group of guys who are decent, at least.
Yeah. Stability. Sense. Like, nobody's in there worrying about getting optioned down to AAA. I think that was maybe Pagan's last worry, but okay, you're here. You earned your spot. You pitched into your spot. You're not going to get traded. The trade deadline is passed. Like, okay, now all you have to do is focus on your pitching. Like, focus on your pitching. Mm-hmm. Don't think about the fact that there's a pen full of guys in Tacoma behind you.
Uh-huh.
Because those are some guys who have had some struggles. Altavilla's had some struggles.
Yeah. I have a question for you, Kate.
Yeah.
Is Tyler Cloyd still on the Rainiers?
Yeah. So I think Tyler Cloyd is currently assigned to Tacoma, I think so, and he's had like a little bit of a rough go lately.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look him up real quick.
Because I just remember that Tyler Cloyd has a win. He has one appearance, and he has a win, and I'm really looking forward to that Sporkle, where people have to name all of the players, all the pitchers who got wins.
He had one inning pitched where he allowed two hits.
Mm-hmm.
And struck out one, and got the win for that inning.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you, Tyler. Good for you, Tyler Cloyd.
It's all Tyler's.
It's all Tyler's.
Is he the last Tyler standing in AAA?
Yeah, actually, because Smith is gone and O'Neill's gone, so.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, I have the roster right here. Yeah, we have a Taylor with Mono, but.
Does prefer it pronounced Taylor.
Taylor. Yeah, and then there's Thiago, which I don't know if that translates to Tyler in Brazilian or in Portuguese or not. So I'm pretty sure he's down there with them right now. The deal with him is he's just coming off of Tommy John, so he's on a pretty strict pitch limit. Yeah, he just pitched July 29th, so he's with them. He did not have a great go of it. he gave up three runs over three innings. Yeah, sometimes he looks really good and untouchable, and other times he looks not great. But, you know, for guys was in indie ball literally like 3 months ago. Not bad.
Indie ball and rehabbing.
Indie ball, rehabbing, and he has a major league win. What a year for Tyler Cloyd it's been. Indeed.
So, I guess, just to wrap things up on this, Do you think it's fair to say you think the Mariners are a better team than the Royals and the Rays?
I think it's fair to say.
I don't want to put you in the corner. I think the Mariners are a better team than the Royals and the Rays. What do you think?
I think it's fair to say that on paper they are better teams. Like, I think the bullpen has the edge. With the Rays, I think the pitching staff probably has the edge just because Paxton is playing better right now, I think, than Archer.
Man, that's a hell of a commentary on the Rays.
Yeah. Well,
I guess if you're counting the pen and the starters as a whole, then yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, they've had Boxberger be terrible and just a bunch of guys falling apart.
I would give them the edge on paper. I just don't know what it's going to look like when we go there. The Royals make me more nervous. And I don't know, honestly. I think on paper they look better, but I am scarred by the memory of those games, and they were awful. And you know, they got the doors blown off of them by the Royals, and the Royals weren't playing particularly well. Maybe that's the thing. They did only put up 3 against Moore. They didn't totally boat race us. So
it was not capitalizing.
That was that swoon that they had right before the break, and I do kind of wonder, like how much of that was being tired, or I don't. They just did not play very well going into the break. They are playing better now.
Yeah,
we will see very soon. In 5 minutes, actually, we will start finding out.
Okay. So before we go to the break, I have a quick little, fairly unrelated game for you here, because today a few teams placed some major players on revocable waivers, which essentially means if they get claimed and the team doesn't want to give them away, they can just pull them back, or they can orchestrate a trade between that player or that team, and if the player passes all the way through waivers without being claimed, then the team can orchestrate a trade with anyone of that player. So the two players that were placed on, and this is a fairly common thing, this is not necessarily a commentary on the players themselves, but the two players that had this happen were Justin Verlander, who the Tigers have been shopping and probably aren't going to move at this point, since waiver trades are more complicated than your standard fare, but and the other is Jose Bautista, who has been rough this year, and so that got me to thinking about, well, Bautista was a player that I think fairly understandably was, you know, when someone that I think a lot of Mariners fans wanted them to target this offseason. You know, this very proven bat, you know, who could come in and be an extremely strong player. The trade-off was he would have cost a draft pick,
right?
In this year's draft, and he also, you know, is older. I think he's 36. He's approaching 37, and is appalling defensively. to say the least, and has, you know, and last year saw a huge fall off in his production. So, you know, was an all-star for the last several years. But last year was really rough. So I was curious how some of the other players that folks might have been interested in signing have done. And if you'll indulge me, Kate, we'll just do a little quick over-under on how some of the free agents have compared to the Mariners' counterparts at their position. How's that sound? I want you to, without looking, I've given you perhaps a little bit of a hint here on Bautista, how the players have compared to the Mariners' productivity. So, and we'll just go by the person who's played the position the most from there. So, you ready?
I am ready. Let's play. I also do want to point out, though, that it's not just the biggest names like Verlander and Bautista make their way to us, but tons and tons of players are placed on revocable waivers if people don't understand exactly how they work. Beyond the Box Score has a really great write-up of it that uses a very accessible fries analogy, French fries analogy. So if you're confused about revocable waivers, you want to hear about that or know how they work more, Google revocable waivers Beyond the Box Score, and it will set you right. Okay.
All right. Let's see. Let's just start here with an easy one. Let's go with Ian Desmond, first baseman. How do you think Ian Desmond, first baseman, has compared to Danny Valencia?
So much worse. He's been awful, right?
You think Ian Desmond has been worse than...
Yes, I think Ian Desmond has been worse than Danny Valencia.
All right, let's see. Let's see here. After breaking his hand and missing a little bit of time, Ian Desmond has, who signed a...
bajillion
dollar, 5 year, $70 million contract.
Yes, we don't need the. We know the numbers.
Yes, he's played 65 games, 264 at bats, got a 70 WRC plus and negative 0.4 WAR. So worse than Danny Valencia, who has not been good, particularly by F4.
Okay.
Well, by if we're going by F4, I mean if we're going by BUR, he's been about a. A below average starter. If we're going by F4, he's been a very poor player. I would say it's somewhere in the middle, because while Valencia's defense has been much better than expected, his hitting against righties, as we I think expected, has been below average, which is tough to do when you play every day. So. All right, so one for one for you, Kate, as you furiously look up Danny Valencia's information.
Also, I think there's something to be said for Danny Valencia being durable and, like, rolling out. He was just supposed to platoon, but he's instead rolled out there at first base and played one of the best first bases, if not the best first base in the American League.
By
defensive
a number of
runs
metrics.
Saved, at least. Yes. As I informed the gentleman behind me, who was, for some reason, just wearing out Danny Valencia, only Danny Valencia, and wearing a Mariners hat. So
I'm curious.
So confused.
Do you
by
think
that.
when they have September call-ups and presumably Vogelbach comes up, do you think they do some degree of platooning lefty righty with him?
Vogelbach, if he continues to hit the way he did in July, I posted his July numbers. A while ago, let's see if I can find those.
Yeah. And I think he was hitting well, but and also had been in some of the more hitter friendly parks in the PCL. Right?
He definitely was, and he was also able to beat up on some teams that he traditionally has beat up on, like the Oklahoma City Dodgers, who he just owns for whatever reason. So it's partially that, but it's also literally after the home run derby. He's been like, oh, wait, I can hit for power.
Does this fall into the Justin Smoke category of, I learned that I could just stop swinging at bad pitches and only swing at good pitches, and now I'm a good player category? Because that was one of the most mind-boggling revelations I've ever seen.
No one has ever claimed that Justin Smoke is a smart man, okay?
Yeah, that's... I mean, the Smoke and Tyler O'Neill combo of lessons of, oh, I don't have to just, I can also hit for average, I don't just have to hit for power, shade some very poor light on the Jack Zarengic regime's development habits.
Oh, for sure. I mean... Yeah. Tyler O'Neill discovering what a walk was after he was 3 years into the system is a good god. So Vogelbach, July, 327, 408, 540 slash line, 5 home runs, 9 doubles, which was as many as he hit in the previous season, in the entire first half.
Ooh.
Yeah. He was just, you know, he's got incredible plate discipline. He wants to get on base however he can, so he just takes his walk. He does not swing at bad balls, which is good because he's not a great bad ball hitter. He's got that weird swing to begin with. So this is, he's just got to continue strong, and they've showed a real desire to reward players who are doing well in AAA. That's why Leonis got called up over Boog, who's since going back to AAA had a little bit of a dip in his production. That's why Boog got called up the first time over Leonis. Boog was out hitting Leonis. That's why Tyler Smith got the call. They'll reward the players who are playing well, and those players know it. You and I were at the game. Gonzalez's first start, and Jerry DePoto was there. We were sitting behind him, and my gosh, weren't they all just such prompt, good little baseball boys? The inning was ordered, just vroom, right out to my position. No lollygagging. Let me run out this grounder to first base as hard as I can. Yeah, they absolutely knew that he was there, and were trying to impress Dad. So
yeah. All right, let's see. Let's pick another name out of this hat here.
Okay.
Let's go with Bautista, Jose Bautista, for DH or right field. We'll say right field because he's played a fair amount of DH since the Blue Jays also have Kendrys Morales, who I guess we could do a joint package. Actually, let's go with that. Jose Bautista plus Kendrys Morales versus Mitch Haniger, straight up. We'll just say straight up.
Well, because of all the injuries, I guess I have to. I mean, unless his April is enough to lift him over, but no, I think maybe it's Kendrys and Bautista.
Okay, so Mitch Haniger thus far, 117 WRC+. His BABIP is back down to a more normal 318. He's been worth 1.2 WAR, a pretty respectable season. Sort of that's about a 3 WAR pace. To make this easier, instead of going to their individual pages, I'll just go to batting leaders and then search by WAR inverted. And there we have Kendrys with the 8th lowest performance of the year.
Oh.
Negative 0.5.
Wow.
And Jose Bautista at negative 0.3. So,
Mitch Haniger out
win by 2 wins is a better by a full starter has been better.
Wow.
Than Kendrys, who signed for 3 years, $33 million. And Jose Bautista for 1 year and $18.5 million with a mutual option. I should know. This is not to by any means shame anyone who thought.
No, it's very surprising. I would say that there should be a way to. I mean, Haniger has just missed so much time. So
yes,
you know, I feel like that's something that you have to take into consideration
for sure.
A little.
If you put in though like just replacement level play, I mean, you know, you probably are. You're still in positive because Haniger's been positive,
right?
And better than that. So, but yeah, I mean, nobody thought I think Bautista would be this bad. You know, Morales was a better player last year than this. Desmond was at least a good player, you know, last year. So, this is by no means to say like, haha, we were smart or anything. It is more just to say, haha, this is great. That the Mariners did not pay this amount of money for these guys who have been crap. And some of these, you know, have worked out well, obviously. Let's see. There's just a few more here. Dexter Fowler, who was certainly, I think, on the high end of the wish list. He signed a 5-year, $82 million contract.
To go play for the fine fans of St. Louis.
Indeed. The... the B-Fib versus, I guess, we'll say, would you say adding Gerard and Leonis is fair? I think that's a fair way of doing it.
Adding Gerard and Leonis?
Combining Gerard Dyson and Leonis. Yes.
I feel like that one might come out as a push. Maybe Fowler's a little ahead, but he has been hurt this year too, right? And
yes,
he's missed a bunch of time.
He's missed some time.
And he's not been great in the outfield. I don't think he's been especially great with the bat. So
Dyson's played 81 games, so he's
I feel like Dyson outweighs I would have said Dyson higher than Fowler, but I feel like Leonis pulls things down. So
he does.
I might give a slight edge to Fowler there.
It will still be Dyson and Leonis combining to be better. Martins had a real rough stretch. He's worked his WRC plus back into being positive.
Okay.
It's 16
now. 16!
His
sweet
line
16.
He's still got a 155, 200, 239 triple slash, which is not good.
It's still 20 or 30 points higher than when he came back up, so.
Significantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's been nice. And Dyson gets just such a big boost from his speed and from his defense. So he's been a just over two wins. And Fowler has been a 1.1 win player. So not hitting quite as well. The defense has been down. Dyson obviously on a 1 year, I think $2.8 million. We caught it, got him in a trade. And whether we extend him or not, probably not, just because the money could go to pitching.
Yeah.
And when the team has 15 reasonable outfielders, that just probably isn't where the money should be spent. But man, what a fun player and a great, great guy to have on the team. All right. We'll do two more of these real quick.
Okay.
We'll go with Mark Trumbo. And you can take your pick, because I believe he's played a mixture of first base and outfield. So would you rather have him stacked up against outfielder or Danny Valencia again?
Let's do outfielder. Okay. There's someone else we can pick. How about Heredia?
Okay, we'll go with Heredia. That seems fair. Trumbo's had
Trumbo and Heredia on scales, and it's just a funny visual image to me. Sorry.
He's just so big. He's such a large man.
Yeah.
Trumbo's played essentially every day. He's had 103 games, 443 plate appearances, so he's not been hurt really. Although he's hurt now with a strained
rib cage. Didn't know you could
strain a bone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Weird. I am going to say, because Trumbo hasn't been that good, and Heredia has really surprisingly hung out around a 270 batting average, and has showed a little bit of power and gets that huge boost from the speed defense, I'm going to say Heredia.
You are correct.
Yeah.
Again. Honestly, this may seem like it's just blowing smoke up the Mariners, but I am looking at the top the top signings, and outside of Yoenis Cespedes, which we will do in a sec, these are the some of the top signings. These are four of the six, I guess, top.
So you're not cherry picking guys who have specifically been bad, is what you're saying? You're going with the guys who got paid the most money.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So Heredia has been a 1.3 win player, which is particularly impressive considering his sort of backup role for a lot of the time. He's played in 80 games, which is pretty good, but he's had only 278 player appearances. So, he's had a lot of games as a defensive replacement or, pinch running or something of that nature. Trumbo has struggled. He has been a negative 0.5 win player, right there with Kendrys Morales, and right there with Mike Napoli, actually, who also has been just really rough. Yeah, they are struggling. Trumbo has had some power still, but he's got an 85 WRC plus. You know, he isn't a defensive strength, and his numbers just across the board, 238, 300, 405. So it is another, you know, situation where I guess if I'm trying to paint this picture as some bullets were dodged, and he would have also cost a draft pick. And
yeah.
3 years, $37.5 million. Very understandably, looked like a good deal at the time. And this is more results based. This is not analysis again. Like, this would be very results based analysis, and no one at the time would have said, "Oh yeah, Trumbo's going to fall apart." But simply that he has not performed, and the Mariners, at least this year, have been fortunate in that regard.
And they got Evan White and Sam Carlson.
Yes.
Both of whom I'm very excited about.
Yeah. So the final guy in the outfield, outfield plus, I guess, that was worth a, or was would have been costing a draft pick, is Yoenis Cespedes. And Cespedes, I think, has also had some injury issues, but he's back out now. He's played in 60 games, 240 plate appearances, so just a little bit shy of the number of plate appearances that Heredia has had. For some context, Heredia's had 280, I want to say, or 278. If you want actually a pretty much direct comparison, Mitch Haniger and Yoenis Cespedes have played almost the exact same amount. 60 games, 240 plate appearances for Cespedes, 58 plate appearances, or 58 games for 247 for Haniger. Who do you think comes out on top between Cespedes and Haniger? Or Cespedes and Gamel, or Cespedes and
Let's do Cespedes Gamel, because we haven't done...
Okay.
Who I just watched ground out. Hi, Ben. Hi, Ben. Kansas City, Missouri is 78 degrees. Seattle is 90. Portland is 102. Medford is 108.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Walla
awesome,
Walla is
awesome.
97. Oh, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's a cool little graphic, Royals broadcast. Thanks. Or actually, I guess I'm watching the Seattle broadcast. Okay, so Gamel versus Cespedes. I'm going to give it to Gamel, obviously. Gamel's been great.
He has indeed. But even not just in terms of, like, because he's played 20 more games, but even on pace, Cespedes has been a 0.7 win player. He's struggled, and part of that has been health, but he's also walking less. He's not striking out as much, but his power hasn't been there either. He's been a good player, but he's not had the same level of production. So,
yeah,
I think it's likely that we will see this team go in free agency this offseason and look for players who, they'll have to make some big acquisitions in free agency this offseason. And sometimes that goes well, and sometimes it does not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think focusing on the pitching staff is likely going to be where they have to go. And thankfully, they did not go after position players, because those so far have looked real rough this year.
Yeah, it sort of makes you feel good, too, about the youth core. Like, if anyone hasn't read it, Luke Arkins on Prospect Insider has a good piece kind of responding to Rosenthal's the Mariners destined to crash, doomed to crash, unsafe at any speed, whatever it was. He has a pretty good response written to that, where it's just looking at the core that they have, the youth core, and how good those players have been, so... How long we'll have them, at least.
All right. Well, you have completed the game. I I wish that I could have made it slightly less one-sided, but that is really just how it's been.
Oh, those are just the facts. It is
not a terrible situation. So, every qualifying offer costing player, draft pick costing player, has been either an active detriment to their team or less productive than what the Mariners
what they
have
already
brought
have.
Out in the outfield.
Pretty
so
good.
That is a pretty neat
pretty
thing.
Good. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Unfortunately, I have to run due to some unforeseen complications. I need to head out and go pick up some family. So we will not be getting to the Twitter questions. We had some delightful Twitter questions.
Some very good stories were told about the Heat.
Exceptional, really. So those unfortunately will have to be saved for next time.
I too must go tend to my very sick kitty cat. So
yes, Henry has been a trooper today in the Heat, and hopefully he is perking up.
So unfortunately, gonna have to cut things short this week, but. We hope that you will send us your questions again next week when we meet up and talk about whatever happens this week.
And the Mariners are in a wild card position, hopefully.
I like your enthusiasm. I just watched them go 1-2-3 against Trevor Cahill, so I wish I shared it. But. Okay. Oh, hey, it's Melky Cabrera coming up. I'm totally not sick of his face. Yeah. Definitely have not seen enough of him. All right, so off we go. But thank you so much, those of you who listen every week. We really appreciate it. And feel free to hit us up on Twitter with your questions anytime. And we will talk to you soon.